This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
They used to be regular guests in our homes anytime we chose, entertaining us when we switched on our radio and television sets. Now it's time to hear again the voices that came out of the glow. A very good day to regular listeners to Out of the Glow, and any new ones listening in New Zealand or elsewhere. I'm Paul Featherston, and Steve Price is panelling. With us today are Eddie Lowe, Dad and Dave, and Groucho Marx. And at the keys to begin, Liberace.
Gentlemen, for your wonderful welcome. It sure is nice to be with all of you again. I have a kind of a special treat in store for you today in answer to many of your requests to meet some of the members of the orchestra. I'd like to start off with having you get a little better acquainted with the strings in the orchestra. And when we speak of strings, naturally we think of George, because he is the leader and the first violinist in the orchestra. George, could you give the boys over there a downbeat and we'll get a little better acquainted with everyone? Okay, now we're going to start with you, George. Could you give us a little solo? Would you like to hear that? A little solo from George? Okay, something real schmaltzy, George. Number Jack Benny taught you, eh? Well, George likes the violin so much that he surrounded himself with other violinists in the orchestra, and I'd like to have you meet some of them right now. Excuse me, George. This is Mr. Boardman, and we never call him Mr. Boardman. That's too formal. We always call him Dad because he's just like a father to us. And the amusing thing about Dad is that I happen to know he voted for Eisenhower, and his first name was Truman. Truman Boardman. Nice to have you with us, Drew. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is our friend Emil Briano, a wonderful violinist who has appeared in many of the major symphony orchestras of our country. And I think he's most proud of the fact that he was featured for quite some time with Arturo Toscanini and his wonderful symphony. Nice to have you with us, Emil. And this Italian gentleman is Mr. Walter Borzella, we discovered Walter in San Francisco, where he was doing such remarkably good work with the Betty Hutton and the Judy Garland shows at the Curran Theater. We're very happy to have you with us, Wally. Now, back to you, George. Suppose all the strings and you got together. How would that sound?
From his TV show of 1954, Liberace, entertaining us on Out of the Glow from Plains FM, Christchurch, New Zealand. We go across the sea from Christchurch now to Australia. In fact, to Snake Gully, where we meet up again with Dad and Dave. A good day to Krista Sparer of Aranui, who used to live in Adelaide. Any Australians in tune? And to John Newman in Burnside, Jim Smart of Papua Nui, and Bob Gant, who lives in Church Corner.
Sarah, you don't mean to tell me that I'm getting the measles?
You're not just getting them, Dad. You've got them. Oh, come in here, all of you. Let's get out of this crowd. Come in this room.
But I can't have measles at my age.
Dad, the kind of measles that are going round now seem to attack people of all ages.
Fancy you getting the measles.
Oh, you needn't laugh, Bill Smith. You're in the same boat.
Yes, that's right, but I was forgetting that for the minute.
Well, you have my sympathy, both of you. I know what it is to be tied to your bed for a couple of months.
What? A couple of months?
Help, I didn't keep you in bed for 2 months.
Well, it seemed like a couple of years.
Oh, well, I think I'll be getting along home. It's getting late, you know. Goodbye, everyone. Come on,
boys. Look at him sneaking off like a coward for fear he might get contaminated.
Well, you can't blame him for that, Father. Measles are very catching, you know.
Here we are. Close the door, Mabel. And now, Dad, let me have a look at you properly. Oh, yes, I think you'd better come home to bed, Dad. It's not good for you standing about here in this overheated hall.
Oh, that's right, Mum. You can't be too careful, you know. Besides, you might spread them, Dad.
You ought to talk, Alf. You're the one who started this epidemic in the first place.
He did not, Mr. Smith.
Yes, he did. He was the first one to get them.
Somebody else must have had them before Alf for him to catch them from.
Well, I don't see much sense in standing around here arguing on who started them. The main thing is that everybody seems to be getting them.
Well, don't you think we could go home now?
Yes, I suppose so, Sarah. But it beats me why we should have an outbreak of measles in a healthy place like Snake Gully.
Well, I'm going home to bed. Come on, Mabel.
Oh.
Well, what's the matter now?
Oh, I've just thought of something. Oh, you can't come home to our place.
What?
Oh, not with measles. What if you gave them to the twins?
Yes, that's right, Mabel. It'd be dangerous, wouldn't it?
Ah, so my own daughter's turning me out.
Oh, Father, I'm not turning you out. But you wouldn't like to risk giving your little grandchildren the measles, would you?
No, I suppose you're right, Mabel. It might be dangerous.
Of course it would be dangerous. You keep away from my grandchildren.
They're my grandchildren, too.
Well, that doesn't give you the right to give them measles, does it?
Dad, I wish you'd come home and get to bed.
But what are we going to do with Bill?
Well, what's wrong with him going to Alec and Ursula's place?
Oh, you know very well that they left on their holidays 3 days ago.
Oh, yes, that's right. So they did. Well, I suppose you'll just have to go home to your own place, Bill.
Oh, he can't do that, Dad. He couldn't stay in a house all by himself with no one to nurse him.
Well, I don't like saying it, Father, but it looks as if you'll have to go to the hospital.
Yes, it'll have to be the hospital, Bill.
I suppose it will, and I hate hospitals. The very thought of a hospital makes me feel twice as sick as I did before.
Well, I don't think there's any help for it, Bill.
Of course there's help for it, Dave. There's no reason in the world why Mr. Smith should go to a hospital if he doesn't want to. He can come home to our place and I'll look after him.
Oh, do you really mean that, Mum?
Of course I do.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you, Mum. It'd be bonzer if I wouldn't be giving you too much trouble.
You'll be no trouble at all, Mr. Smith. I've got to look after Dad, so I might as well look after you at the same time.
There's no doubt about you, Sarah. You're a sport, and I'll be glad to have you, Bill.
Oh, thanks, Dad. I appreciate that.
Where are you going to put them, Mum?
Well, I'll put another bed in your old room, Dave, and they can both go in there.
I'd like you to come over and help me move the furniture, if you wouldn't mind.
Oh, good, Al.
Winnie and I'll come over and give you a hand, too.
Oh, thanks, Alf. Well, now, I'm not going to allow you two sick men to stand around here any longer. You're going straight home to bed this instant. Now, you two go along into the front room and get into your pajamas while we're getting the room ready. You can lend Mr. Smith a pair of pajamas and a dressing gown, can't you, Dad?
Yes, and I can lend you a pair of slippers too, Bill, if you don't mind the toes being out of them.
No, I don't mind, Dad. And Mabel can bring my own things over for me in the morning.
All right, come on, Bill.
All right, which way do we
go? Now, Dave, will you and Alf go and get that spare bed off the veranda and bring it into the spare room?
There are two spare beds out there, Mum. Which one do you want?
Bring the one next to Jack's. It's more comfortable.
Oh, good, Mum.
Come on, Alf.
Annie, will you get the bed linen out of the press? You know where I keep everything.
Yes, Mum, I'll get it.
Come on into the spare room with me, Mabel, and we'll decide where we'll put the bed.
You know, I think it's wonderful of you to have your father over here, Mum.
Oh, nonsense, dear. It's nothing at all.
Oh,
I think they'll be quite comfortable in here, don't you, Mabel?
Oh, yes, Mum, yes. Quite comfortable. Oh, this is a dear little room. But I thought Jack was using this room.
Well, he does in the winter, Mabel, but he likes to sleep out on the veranda in the summer.
Well, that's one thing about having a good-sized house. You've always got plenty of places to put people. I don't suppose Jack will come home till after the very last dance is over.
Oh, I don't suppose so, or Uncle Clarence either. He was enjoying himself immensely. Now, how do you think we ought to place the beds?
Well, what about shifting that dressing table and putting the beds each side of the window, see? They'll be side by side then,
yes.
So they can chat to each other, and you'll have the width of the window for walk-in space between the two beds.
Yes, so then they'd be nice and easy to make, wouldn't they? Yes, Mabel, I think that would be the very best place.
Well,
where do you want this bed put, Mum?
Well, just put it down there for a minute, Alf, and you and Dave move the dressing table over to the other wall.
Oh,
then put the bed up there, see?
Good, Mum. Come on, Alf. Give us a hand with this dressing table.
Oh, lift it up, will you, boys? So that it doesn't scratch the linoleum. It's not very heavy.
Righto. Come on, Alf.
Good, Dave. Well, I've got it. Come on.
Mind the mirror, Dave.
Yes, Mum. I'm minding it.
Oh, there we are. How's that?
Well, look, just push it into the wall a little more on your side, Alf, will you?
Oh,
that's it. That's it.
Yeah, we'll get the bed into position now.
Here's the linen and blankets, Mum, and I've put the kettle on. I thought they might like a cup of tea when they're in bed.
Oh, thanks, Annie. I don't know about your father, Mabel, but Dad's always ready for a cup of tea.
Oh, my father's just the same, Mum, and Dave's worse than any of them.
Is that about right for the bed, Mum?
Yes, that's about right, Dave. Just give that other one a little pushover. That's it. Yes, now we can make them up.
What about another little table, Mum? If we put that one by the side of the bed, we could bring in that little one outside and put it by the side of the other bed.
Yes, that's right, Annie. They'll need a little table each. Will you bring it in, dear?
Yes, I'll get
it. Look, Mum, I'll make this bed while you're making that one.
Oh, all right, dear. Here, these are your two sheets.
Thanks. Well, look, will this be my father's bed? Because he doesn't like the sheet tucked in at the bottom.
Yes, that's his, dear. And here are your pillowcases, Mabel.
Thanks, Mum, very much.
Fancy your father and Dad both getting the measles at the same time, Mabel. Wasn't it funny?
Well, they're always together, you know, Mum.
Yes.
Although they're always picking at each other, I notice they seem to like each other's company.
Just between you and me, Mabel, I think that Dad and Mr. Smith would be quite lost if they didn't have each other to fight with now and then. I honestly believe they enjoy it.
Oh, I wouldn't be a bit surprised, Mum.
I wonder if that'll be enough blankets for your father, Mabel.
Oh, yes, plenty, Mum. He'll be doing well if he keeps those two on. He always kicks the blankets off in summer.
Well, I hope he won't do that while he's got the measles. He's got to keep himself warm. Goodness, where have those men disappeared to?
Hanging round the kettle, I'll bet, waiting for their cup of tea.
Here we are, Mum. Here's the other little table. There. I think they'd be very comfortable, don't you?
Can we come in now?
Yes, come in, Dad. We're just finishing making up your beds. Come on in, Mr. Smith.
Oh, that's good, the way you've got it fixed up, Mum.
Yes, well, I hope you don't snore, do you, Bill?
No, I don't, and I hope you can say the same for yourself.
Well, you don't have to worry about that. I sleep as quietly as a newborn babe.
Well, in you both get.
And if you want anything at any time, just call out. I'll be able to hear you.
Go on, Father, get into bed.
I don't want all these blankets, Mabel.
You've got to have them, Father. When you've got measles, you've got to be kept warm.
Two blankets in the middle of summer?
Oh, it's all right, Bill. Don't get excited. If I remember rightly, Annie cooked Alf till he was done to a turn.
Oh, well, I suppose we'll have to put up with it. It would be our luck to get the measles when there's so much going on in the town that needs our attention.
It doesn't matter. You'll just have to work everything out in bed like Alf did. Alf's a wonderful invalid, though. He's no trouble. Never complains.
Oh, I don't know about not being any trouble, Annie. The first day you put him into bed, he nearly drove us all mad, beating that gong thing.
Well, you're nice and comfortable now, both of you.
I'm good, oh, thanks, Mum, except for these two blankets.
Oh, now, look, it's no use grumbling about that, Father. You've just got to put up with it.
Hey, Sarah, does it play up with a man's measles if he has a cup of tea? I could do with one. I've got a terrible thirst.
No, Dad, a cup of tea won't do either of you any harm, and Annie's put the kettle on. So you and Mr. Smith just settle down and get comfortable, and we'll go and bring it in to you.
Hey, Bill. Bill. Will you stop snoring, Bill Smith? What you trying to do, lift the roof off? Bill Smith!
What? Hey, what do you mean by chucking the slipper at me?
You're lucky that's all you got. If I'd had an axe, I would have thrown that. Waking a man up in the small hours of the morning.
I didn't wake you up.
You did, with your snore.
I wasn't snoring at all. It was you who woke me up, bellowing like a mad bull.
What are you talking about, Bill Smith? I don't snore.
Oh, don't you? Well, who was that making all that row? Have you got Molly, your happy cow, under your bed?
No, I have not. And if I did have, the two of us together couldn't have beaten you.
I thought you said you didn't snore at all.
And I don't either.
Oh, come off it, Dad. You were making a row like half a dozen foghorns. Why don't you lie on your side?
I tell you I wasn't snoring.
And I tell you you were.
Bill Smith, how dare you come into my house and make false accusations?
I'm not making false accusations, and I'm not going to have you making them against me. As to coming into this house, I wouldn't have come at all if I'd known I was going to have to put up with your thundering away all through the night.
Yes, and if I wasn't a sick man, I'd have a go at you for that.
And if I wasn't too sick to walk, I'd get out of this house. I wish now I'd let them send me to the hospital.
They wouldn't have you at the hospital. You'd give all the patients insomnia.
Dad, Mr. Smith, what in the world's all this row about in the middle of the night?
It's all right, Mum. It's not the fire alarm. It's Bill Smith snoring.
I wasn't snoring. It was himself.
Don't you tell lies to me. Don't you tell lies about... What are you talking about, Bill Smith?
Oh, Dad.
Well, he's not going to say that I snore.
And you're not going to say that I do. I'm not going to stay here to be insulted. I've a good mind to get up out of my bed now, sick as I am, and go straight off to the hospital.
Good, oh, I'll get up and go with you for the pleasure of seeing you all.
That'll be quite enough now. Now, just you stop quarreling, go off to sleep, or I'll pack your things first thing in the morning and bundle you both off to hospital.
We'll be back in Snake Gully in the near future. You can be sure of that. Right now, Eddie Lowe joins us for a concert in the groove. He sings first one of the best-known songs in his repertoire, his cover of an original by the Dutch band The Cats, One Way Wind. This is for Ted Moore in Rangiora and the McNaughtons off Pages Road on the way down to New Brighton.
You said some wind blow forever, and I didn't understand. But you saw my eyes were asking, and smiling you took my hand. So we walked along the seaside, where trees grow just one way, finding out the one direction that a wind blows day after day.
Sure as the
when you walk out the door. And it's crying time again, you're gonna leave me. I can see that faraway look in your eyes. I can tell by the way you hold me, darling, that it won't be long before it's crying time. Yes, I can tell by the way you hold me, darling, that it won't.
Crying Time and One Way Wind, Eddie Lowe at the mic. He's ending now with the popular Scarlet Ribbons.
My people to say goodnight. When I heard my child in prayer send, dear God, some scarlet ribbons, scarlet ribbons for my hair. All the stores were closed and shuttered, all the streets were dark.
That's Concert in the Groove from Eddie Lowe, ending with Scarlet Ribbons. In a fortnight, Chris McCabe is here to introduce Pam Ayres. Here now is Groucho Marx, who had wanted to be a doctor, and throughout his life he read about politics, economics, and baseball. Hello to Blair Smith and Brindwa. On radio, Groucho with Bing Crosby.
No applause, please. I'm not here as an actor. I'm here as a barrister. My card, Crosby. Read it and give it back. I don't want to spoil the deck.
Hey, quite a law firm you have here. Mulholland, Crenshaw, Adams, Fairfax, Wilshire, and La Cienega. Where do you come in?
Between Melrose and Franklin on the streetcar.
Where's your office?
On the streetcar I came up here on. And if you think having a motorman for a secretary is any fun, you just try it sometime. Couldn't even get him to take off his gloves. Now, let's get down to business, Crosby. My client, Miss Wartcruncher, is suing you for $50,000.
Now, wait a minute.
All right, we'll settle for $40,000.
$40,000?
You haven't got it on you. I have the wrong Crosby, and I understand there is a wrong Crosby.
104% right. You must mean Brother Everett, but Groucho...
I don't mean Gummo.
Before I part with this kind of tin, don't you think it would be... All right, or would you consider me impertinent? Would you? This is quite a word here. Impertinent.
You want to shorten it down and try a different way?
I'm doing a small Durante on this word. Would I be impertinent if I ask you why?
Very well, but only one question to a defendant. That took care of my answer. Now answer this. Now answer this question. Did you or did you not drive recklessly down Hollywood Boulevard on your way to the studio this afternoon?
No, I drove very cautiously down Sunset.
42 paid witnesses can't be wrong. You came down Hollywood Boulevard, and when you turned onto Vine Street, you splashed mud all over my client.
Mud? Where would you get mud on Vine Street?
I get it from a fellow who's got a dirty mind. Never mind where I get my mud, and you were driving recklessly.
What was I driving?
It was either a Cadillac convertible or a Philco console. But that's not important.
You don't know my sponsor.
I don't know any sponsor, and if I did, I'd have a show of my own. Phil Harris has two shows. What have I got? An office on a streetcar and a bucket full of mud.
I don't want to get entangled in any litigation here, so produce your client. If she can identify me, I'll be glad to make reparations. But frankly, I don't think she has a leg to stand on.
Frankly, I don't know. I've never seen her in a short dress. Oh, Miss Crunchwattle.
The name? The name is Wartcruncher, Mr. Giesler.
Did you tell her you were Jerry Giesler?
Get a much bigger fee that way, yeah? And if you keep your mouth shut and pay off, I'll split it with you, Crosby. Now, Miss Wartcruncher, what's your first name?
Lana.
Lana? Lana, what hollow mockery. Is Crosby here the man who splashed you?
Yes, that's the man. He was wearing a gray Homburg hat, a frock coat, an ascot tie, striped trousers, and spats.
Boy, have you got the wrong man.
Don't be too sure. Now, Lana, when this man passed you in his car, was he also wearing a diamond stick pin?
I'm not sure. About that time, if you remember, you hit me in the face with the mud.
This entire case is a fraud. If I were wearing a frock coat and spats on Vine Street, I'd have them on now, wouldn't I?
Not necessarily. I was wearing a nightgown last night, but I haven't got it on now.
It's a matter of opinion.
You threw your suit away so you couldn't be identified.
I did not.
Then why are you standing there in your underwear?
Not... It's not my underwear. I bought it from Ma Perkins.
Must be mighty breezy right now around the old gal, huh?
Wait a minute. You can't even prove that this girl was standing on the corner.
Not only can I prove that she was standing there, but I'll prove that she was stamping her feet.
What is she stamping her feet for?
She was sending them to Sears Roebuck to get a new pair of shoes. How we fought over that joke, huh?
Wish I'd have won. If you'll dismiss the whole thing, I'll be glad to buy a new dress for this charming young lady.
Charming young lady? I'll lay you 8 to 5. She's none of the three.
What about my damages?
You've got enough damages. What you need is repairs.
All right, then. Shall we say $45, Groucho?
$45? That won't even keep me in saddle soap for my briefcase. Crosby, between you and Mother Nature, you've ruined this young girl's life, huh? And this girl isn't Ingrid Bergman by a long shot. And speaking of long shots, Lanner, I'm afraid you'll never make the bridal pair.
Well, what about Lionel?
Lionel? Who's he?
The man she was betrothed to, she was going to marry this afternoon.
Ah, the plot thickens.
She was on her way downtown to get married. As a matter of fact, she was waiting for my office to come by.
For 20 years, I've been trying to trap Lionel.
Think of how this will sound in front of a jury, Crosby, if they're still awake. 20 years she waits to snag a man, and when she finally gets him cornered, you splash mud on her and he jilts her.
Oh, I'm a beast.
Speaking of beasts, let's get back to my client. 20 long years she waited for Lionel.
Well, where was he all that time?
He was in bed with a very bad haircut. He got mixed up in a clip joint. And now, because of you, this girl will have to spend the rest of her life sitting at home twiddling her thumbs. And there's nothing more disgusting than a pair of twiddle thumbs.
Hold on. I'd
like to see Skitch Henderson play the piano with twiddle thumbs. I'd like to see a Toby play that way. Come to think of it, I'd like to see a Toby. He owes me 20 smackers.
20 smackers. Well, now, that's a nice round figure, and that's just what I'm going to give you.
And that's just what I'm going to take.
Oh, no, you won't. You said we'd hook Crosby for plenty.
That's the trouble with you girls around Hollywood, framing celebrities. Splashing mud on your dress, hiring a cheap, shyster lawyer. Now go before I set the dogs on you. But before you go, I want to say one thing to you. You owe me 85 cents for the mud.
Groucho Marx on the air with Bing Crosby. On Out of the Glow today, we have the first of a short series of another featurette.
Vignettes of life. Stories of people and the way they live. We present Modern Fairy Tales. When the young man meets his friend, it's evident he has some news.
Hi, Watkins, you old scoundrel.
Hi, Simpson, how's things? Seem all excited over something.
Yes, had a most peculiar experience today. Do you believe in fairy tales?
Well, a chap did tell me back to 20 to 1 winner once, were.
Well, as you know, I've been rather worried about cash lately. Obligations on the old homestead and all that. Well, I went into the usual place for a drink, and a chap came up, rather well-dressed. Seemed he'd heard my name at the bank, and asked me if I was the same chap that married Peggy Burton.
That is your wife's name, isn't it?
Well, it was before we married. However, here's where the fairy tale comes in. It turned out that this fellow was Peggy's uncle.
Her uncle?
Yes, her Uncle George from America. He told me she's his own relation, and he was looking for her. Wants to do the right thing by her, get it?
Made a fortune in America, did he?
Yes, in cars or something or other. Mm-hmm. Then he came back here to see if he could find Peggy. She was his favorite niece, he said, and he wants to see that she has no worries anymore. Boy, it was just like a fairy tale. Now, here was I worrying about a paltry 30 pounds, and my wife's rich uncle turns up.
A bit lucky he heard your name at the bank, eh?
Yes, wasn't it, eh? Seems Uncle George asked a few particulars about me, and it turned out I was the very chap he was looking for. Peggy's husband.
Well, what happened?
Well, we had a bit of lunch together. It meant I had to break into the 30 pounds I had, but that didn't matter in the circumstances.
Didn't the rich uncle pay for the lunch?
Well, he couldn't. That's what he was doing at the bank, it seems. Sunderland is money being transferred. He had to wait for a cable this afternoon.
I see. So you paid?
Yes. Lucky I'd drawn the money out, wasn't it? Watkins, old man, I ask you. Now, isn't it like a fairy tale? Young couple, Peggy and I.
Rich uncle from America turns up just as you leave the bank with your last 30 pounds in your pocket.
Amazing coincidence, don't you think?
Yes, definitely amazing. Anyhow, you paid for the lunch. Listen, Simpson, did your wife ever mention she had an uncle in America?
Why, never knew she had an uncle at all. Let alone a rich one in America. She hasn't even mentioned it.
I see. When will you see her?
No, in a minute. I have to meet her here tonight. We're having a bite to eat in town. She's late now.
Yes, well, well, well. You pay for drinks and lunch, owing to the rich uncle being a bit short for the time being. Did you lend him anything to tide him over till the funds arrived?
Well, he sort of hinted it wouldn't go amiss.
Mm-hmm. What did you do?
Well, I've told you everything. What would you have done?
I'd have called the nearest policeman and given him in charge.
You would?
That's one of the oldest tricks in the world. You know that?
Put it there, old boy.
Hey, what's up?
That's exactly what I did. Anyhow, here's the wife. Hello, dear, you're late. And where have you been?
Down to the police station, identifying my Uncle George from America.
From America?
He came back here with a fortune to find his favorite niece. But her fool of a husband charged him with being a confidence man. Now do you know what we get? Nothing.
Our present serial continues.
Please, put your arms around me. Kiss me.
What?
Kiss me.
That's how it began. A foggy night, a lurking peril, and a lovely girl who was too young to die. You sure you know what you're talking about, Eve?
I'm a reasonably rational person, I think.
You're a woman.
A fairy tale that women are incapable of being rational was dreamed up by a man.
Okay, so you're rational. Suppose you tell me what's rational about calling off our deal at this stage.
At this stage? Just what stage are we at?
Look, we're married. We separated to see how things would work out.
I should have left it like that.
Maybe you should. It wasn't very rational of you to ask me to come back to you.
You like to turn the sword in the wound, don't you?
We were talking about your being rational. I say you're not, and I'm just trying to demonstrate.
Oh, Mike, let's not have one of those dreadful sessions in which you flogged me senseless with your overpowering logic.
Well, you did ask me to come back to you, didn't you?
All right, I asked.
And I came back. It was only a couple of weeks ago.
Is that all it is? Seems like a thousand years.
Where are you going? Don't try to walk out on this argument. You started it.
I have no intention of walking out. I'm getting myself a drink, that's all.
Oh.
Whether it's 2 weeks or 2 years, Mike, it makes no difference. It just isn't working out.
And whose fault's that?
Well, I don't care whose fault it is. I'm just tired of making myself miserable by chasing after you.
Well, there's no need to chase. I'm here. I'm keeping my side of the deal.
I'm releasing you from the deal. You can go.
I see. And what will you do when I go? Sit here and drink yourself into a stupor on your own?
Don't be ridiculous. I've never done a thing like that in my life, and I don't intend to start now. Not because of you, or for any other reason.
I never took you for a woman who'd drink alone.
I just told you I do not drink alone.
Well, what the devil do you think you're doing right now?
What? Oh, well...
You might have had the decency to pour me a drink while you were at it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you'd be leaving.
I'm not. Until you start making sense.
It sounded perfectly sensible to me. I told you, you needn't stay with me any longer. I release you from our fabulous deal.
Well, that's all very well. Suppose I don't feel like releasing you.
Releasing me? Well, you mean you might want to stay here with me?
No, not that. Aren't you forgetting your part of the deal?
My part? Oh, yes, it's the £1,000. I'd forgotten that for a moment.
I suppose you want it back.
Want it back? Well, I hadn't thought about it. So that's it.
That's what?
All this argument, all this discussion about whether you stay or go, all you're worried about is that money.
Oh, all right, if you've made up your mind to think the worst of me.
There's something else I wish I could make up my mind about.
What?
Whether if I threw this drink in your face, you would dodge and let it go all over the wall.
What? Oh, now, Eve, now, wait a minute.
You probably would, and I'd feel quite silly for having missed you. Not to mention how I'd need to have the wall repapered.
Oh, Eve, for heaven's sake, let's talk sensibly about
this. I don't feel like being sensible. Can't you see that?
Eve, I'm sorry. Believe me.
You win, Mike. I give in all along the line. You have all the answers, and I'm only a woman, and women can't be rational, and I was a fool to think you could go on loving me, and I might have... known your coming back wouldn't work. Oh, get out, Mike. Just go.
Eve.
Don't say anything. Just go.
Hello? Anyone home?
No. I died last week and I'm never coming back.
Ah, there you are, Charlie.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't come into my shop, Inspector. Really, I do.
Oh?
It's bad for business. People seeing the constabulary popping in and out. People get to think I'm doing something fishy.
No, I don't pop in and out, Charlie. I haven't been here for quite a while. Not since I checked out the story of a certain Michael Chester.
Oh, that man will be the ruin of me yet. I don't. Now, look, you learn something every day.
Oh, you do?
You certainly do. Now, take that Mike Chester, for instance. Mm-hmm. A writer he is. Said he took a flat down here by the docks to get what he calls atmosphere. Well, he seemed a nice fella. Gave me a bit of business now and then. Pawned a few things.
Including his pistol.
That's right. Gave him a fiver on that once. Well, as I say, he seemed a nice, straight-going fella. And then the next thing, he's mixed up in the murder of Betty the Blink.
Tell me, Charlie, about that gun of Chester's.
Oh, he redeemed it, you know. That was the day I told him about Benny, like he said I told him when you asked him about how he knew about Benny.
How much did you give him on the pistol the second time, Charlie?
Second time? What second time?
He brought his pistol to you again, didn't he? I understand he was coming back to see you again.
Oh, did you? Well, now, fancy you understanding a thing like that.
I hope you're able to fix everything up for him, Charlie.
Fix everything? Yeah, no, I don't...
About the pistol, I mean.
The pistol, eh? Yeah. Oh, yes, yeah, that's right. Yes, I fixed him up all right.
Are you sure?
Oh, of course I'm sure.
Good, I'm so glad. I had to be sure everything was all right, you understand.
No, I don't.
What?
And what's more, Inspector, I don't think I want to understand. Thank you very much. And I wonder, would you mind getting out of my shop, Inspector? I don't mind telling you. You fair make me nervous, you do.
All right, Charlie, I'll go. I just wanted to be sure you were looking after Mr. Chester.
How's this for a picnic spot?
Oh, Mike, this is all so crazy.
What's crazy about a picnic? You should be still young enough to enjoy it, even if I'm only kidding myself.
It was your idea. And if you thought you were too old for picnics, you wouldn't have brought me on one.
You know something?
What?
You're right. Come on, let's get organized. Uh-huh. Just get the hamper out of the car and we can go over there under the trees.
Why don't we sit in the sun? Seems ages since I felt the sun on my face.
The sun will spoil the food. You can get yourself all burnt and blistered later.
It'd serve you right if I did. Here, let me take one into the basket.
Right.
Oh, I'm glad you said I needn't wear that disguise of mine. I felt so dowdy in that ugly wig and those glasses.
Yeah, somehow they weren't the real you. Anyway, now Blaney's dead and Inspector Charlton seems determined not to arrest you, I don't see that it matters.
I suppose not. Here, this do?
Yeah, sure. Gently with the basket. There. Now, let's see what we have.
You know perfectly well what we have. You bought it all.
Yeah, I know, but I like to surprise myself.
You're silly.
I feel about 10 years old, I know that. If anyone had told me a month ago that I'd be going on a picnic with the most beautiful girl in the world...
You'd have said they were crazy.
That's right.
And you'd have been right. I am not the most beautiful girl in the world.
You are to me. If I'd only met you 10 years ago.
Yes.
Well, it would have been so simple then. We could have been married.
No. I wouldn't have agreed to marry you.
What?
Mike, 10 years ago, I was just 12 years old.
Oh. For Pete's sake, I meant if we'd met 10 years ago and were just as we are now.
I know what you mean. But you should have seen the look on your face when I said I wouldn't have married you.
Oh, just so you don't ever say it. I mean it.
How could I? It wouldn't be true.
I'll hold you to that.
If you don't, I'll come back and haunt you.
Don't say that, Jan.
Say what?
About dying. Somehow I hate to think about the possibility that...
Oh, Mike, what is it?
You remember when I met you?
Mm-hmm.
You said someone was after you, that your life was in danger. I said you were too young to die.
I remember.
Well, ever since then, I've had it's a kind of a feeling of depression.
Yes.
It hits me now and then as though something... as though something might part us one day.
What kind of thing?
I don't know exactly, I suppose. Death.
Mike. Oh, darling, death parts everyone sooner or later. Nobody lives forever.
That wasn't what I meant. Oh, what's the matter with me? We're supposed to be having a picnic. For the next 2 hours, nobody's allowed to say anything serious, okay?
Okay, let's eat.
Right. That seems to be about everything.
Oh, it was a lovely picnic, Mike. I can't remember when I've had more fun.
Now, I've been thinking, Jan, about something I'd forgotten or tried to forget.
What?
Charlie Tinker. Remember what he said when I picked you up at his place? He said he's got the plane and the pilot organized.
I was wondering when you were going to mention that.
Oh, you hadn't forgotten, huh?
No, Mike. But I didn't say anything because...
Because?
Because leaving England means leaving you. I couldn't go until you were ready to let me go.
Well, I'll never be ready. I don't want you to go.
But then we...
But you've got to go, just the same. I won't be able to sleep at night until I know you're safe. We'll see Charlie in the morning and get you on that plane for Europe. Come on. Time we got going. So we'd come to it at last. The parting of the ways for me and the girl who meant so much to me. Even though I promised myself it'd be only for a while, I had to keep repeating the truth to myself. That her life was in danger. That I had to say goodbye to Jan Carter. Too young to die.
To close the program today, we have another great moment from U.S. boxing history. I hope you're there listening, Lorna and Wilf Metzger in Linwood. Hopefully you'll enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Jack Johnson was one of the great men of boxing. It was on the night of September 24th, 1935, that his name was revived when Joe Louis fought Max Baer for the right to meet James J. Braddock for the heavyweight championship. 3 months earlier, Baer was outpointed by Braddock for the title. Now he was fighting for another chance. Louis was on his way up. A decisive win over Baer would keep him on the road to the title. The fourth round of the fight was one of the most controversial in heavyweight history, with arguments still going on today concerning whether Baer could have gotten up before the count of 10. Listen now to the actual blow-by-blow with Baer hearing the count while on one knee.
Max straightened up, and Louis gives him another left. Now Louis is in close there, and Baer ties him up, and Louis is backing away, but he comes in on Baer. They're right above me as I talk now. Baer with his back to me, and Louis gives him two left jabs. To Baer once more, Louis leads with a left, and Baer has got his hands back close against him. Now and then he sticks out. He ducks his head back that time, and he got a left, good stiff left jolt on the chin. And Max went into a clinch. The referee orders them to break. They're over here against the ropes. Max has got his back. And he took an awful right. And then a left to the jaw. And he has gone to his knees. He's down. And the count is 4, 5, 6. Bear is on one knee. 7, 8, 9. Bear is not up. And Bear is on his knees at the count of 10. Your fight is all over. Your fight is all over.
Bear was one of the most powerful heavyweight hitters to ever step inside the ring. And he reached the height of his career in June 1934 when he met Primo Carnera for the championship. It was one of the worst slaughters in ring history.
And then a terrific right hand to the side of Carnera's face.
Steve Price and myself, Paul F., hope the rest of the weekend goes well for you all, too. We'll be back with you in a week with Pam Ayers and Sandy Powell. And again, Groucho Marx. You take care, and may life be looking up for you. Goodbye. Out of the Glow is an Ear Media presentation recorded at WebMad Christchurch.